You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Different voice behind the mic today. My name is Josh Egan. I'm filling in for James today. This is Offside Hockey Talk you're listening to, and I'm joined today by Jamie and Antonia. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're good.
It's a pretty good day. It's nice and sunny, and Leafs are coming off for a huge win versus Montreal, so every Leaf fan, including myself, should be really happy today. Even though Montreal didn't really play that well last night on back-to-backs with Ottawa, but all in all, Josh and Antonia, it's a very good day. So glad to have you guys jump on for James and Jen today.
For sure. So Leafs fans are in a pretty good mood, but I'm thinking one fan base that probably isn't in the best mood right now is the New York Rangers with the whole Tom Wilson situation going on. It was kind of a gong show for, you know, the Rangers franchise. It made the NHL player safety department look like a joke. It made the NHL look like a joke. And quite frankly, it made the, you know, the owners of the Rangers look like a joke. And Overall, it was just a bad look situation for the NHL. So I'd love to get your thoughts on that. And Antonio, why don't we start with you on that whole situation, starting from the beginning all the way to the big fine being handed out?
Yeah, starting from the beginning with the hit, I didn't like it. Like, I'm not against fighting or anything. Like, I like seeing fights and hits and stuff in the NHL. But what I don't like is when people take it too far. And I feel like Wilson definitely took it too far. I mean, I know Panarin was hurt and he's out for the rest of their season, but like the injuries could have been a lot worse considering like what he did. I would say the players are pretty lucky to walk out of that the way they did. Obviously the fine, I definitely think that it should have been a suspension and not a $5,000 fine. I mean, I think it was McKinnon who got a $5,000 fine for tossing or throwing, whatever you want to call it, the helmet at some other player. I don't remember who it was. So it's just funny to see that comparison. And then you see when the Rangers put out that statement, which I think they had every right to do that. And then you compare their $250,000 fine with a $5,000 fine for what Wilson did. That, I don't know. Like, I understand they did it because they felt embarrassed and that they felt like personally attacked, but I still don't see, like, that comparison's just funny to me, the 250 versus the five. And then the suspension that was it Buchnevich that got the suspension?
Yeah.
For the high stick. I understand, like, the play on its own should have deserved a suspension, but considering circumstances, I feel like it wasn't handled in the best way possible.
For sure. And I just, I did a little breakdown on this and over at the Orient Sportscast, we did a whole 30-minute discussion on it, kind of breaking it down. And it just goes to show how flawed the player safety is, right? We're looking at a dangerous play from a dangerous player who is a repeat offender, according to the definition the NHL has put out there. It's on their website.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Wilson was suspended 7 games earlier this year, and it's a dangerous play on, I don't want to say Panarin was unsuspected, but, you know, he did jump on Wilson's back, but I'm sure he wasn't expected to be ragdolled to the ice and then, you know, got his hair pulled and punched and, you know, he's out for the rest of the season. We know it's only 3 games, but that's still, you're still without your star player. And it's a bad look at the game. And what that led into was just an absolute joke of a game following the 2 days later between the Rangers and the Capitals. Mm-hmm. Because right off the face-off, and Jamie, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this opening brawl, if we could even call it that, was just a fight right off the draw, and then two fights following that. They added up to 100 penalty minutes in the first period. And, you know, this kind of all branched off of all of that from, you know, statements made by both teams. The Washington Capitals put out that they were trying to be funny. They put out that meme that Wilson was rent free. It was all just a mess. So Jamie, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that opening draw fight.
There's many, many angles to go. Oh man. I had Chris Nyland on the podcast. My podcast would be this week, I believe, or last week. And for people tuning in to today's conversation, go back and listen to his answer. Now, we could also look at, you know, Sean Avery. I know it was on TikTok, it was on social media away from the whole Twitter blow up, but he mentioned something that, you know, if he could turn back in time and play in that game, he wouldn't have gone after Tom Wilson. He would have dumped the puck in the zone and waited for the Washington goalie to come out and play it. And he would have ran the goalie like a tractor trailer or a dump truck or whatever, or an excavator, whatever word he used. Like, I don't know what side to really, I don't really know how to handle this. I've met George Parros. I'm part of charity events. I'm not trying to say George Parros is a nice person on the golf course or at a hockey rink around his peers. But it's, when you look at it, it's a CBA thing. They made an agreement that it's a $5,000 fine. Henrik Lundqvist got $5,000 for spraying Sidney Crosby in the face with a water bottle. So maybe in the summertime, instead of going to Florida and having golf tournaments and Boca Raton and all that fun stuff, why don't you really just deep dive into the players' agreement, the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement? That's where the problem is. Right. When you look at a collective bargaining agreement and you've only decided $5,000. Now you have to factor in too, Panarin did jump on the back of Tom Wilson. And to clarify, Antonia, Bushkevich got a five in a game for cross check. I know it was looked like a high stick, but really there's a difference when you get an actual cross check to the face. I've gone through junior hockey all this year, and that happened five or six times. That, I know it's junior A hockey, but that happens all the time, because I know players now have cages and they can't punch the guy in the face. So what they do now is they take the stick and they go right up to the chin and they cross check guys. That's an automatic 1 or 2 game suspension. Now, if Buskevich was a repeat offender, he obviously gets a lot more. But, like, you can't compare also the Crosby tackle in Philadelphia. That's not even close. Like, there's Twitter just – there was two sides of it. Like, people just saying stuff that didn't make sense. But then there was also people that actually follow hockey, that are reporters, that invest in talking about hockey. They actually made some great points. As far as, like, what George Parros was thinking in the war zone, like, I call it the war zone or the war office or whatever they call it, I don't know. Like I've met him in person. I'm not going to say he did a shitty job. Now, did Dolan or the Rangers know that they were going to get $250,000 when they made that statement? I don't know. But it's always said during the scrums, during, you know, Tortorella is known for saying saying things and then getting in trouble for it afterwards. But as far as your question, Josh, like Panarin jumped on Tom Wilson, right? And Tom Wilson didn't care who, like, it didn't matter if it was Sidney Crosby or, like, when you're on the ice and it's a battle zone, it doesn't matter who you're scoring off against. If Panarin understood what the consequences were going to be, he probably wouldn't have did what he did. But when you're in the battle zone and you're in the mix and you're looking at, oh my God, like, would have Panarin jumped on Ryan Reeves' back? in the moment, who knows? But when you're in the moment and you're in that game and you see Tom Wilson beating the crap out of Buskevich, Panarin was the guy. Like, it's happened in junior all year. We've had long line changes, the wrong guys out there, and we've had goon lines beating up our top six line. It just happens. You've got to defend yourself. And Panarin just said, hey, I don't care about the consequences, and I'm just going to go jump on Wilson's back. And what Buskevich did, you know, it's look at the Rangers right now. Dolan is cleaning house because I know he's impulsive. And if you guys want more on this, like Kyle Hall, the Broadway Hat podcast, who covers the Rangers, he says it best. Like, it's just an absolute joke right now in New York. They don't have they sent Brandon Lemieux to the Los Angeles Kings, right? So the Rangers right now are just kind of like the smallest team in the league, very young, and should have Quinn had Panarin on the ice to go against Wilson. Like, Washington's built for the playoffs. You build your team around Tom Wilson, Brad Marchand, Ryan Reeves. So whether the play was dirty, what the NHL knew after just giving a $5,000 slap on the wrist to Tom Wilson, they obviously knew what was going to happen 2 days later. And it happened in New Jersey. The exact same thing. Right? And not to take away from TJ Oshie's hat trick, because everyone's forgot about that. That was the best story out of that whole game. TJ Oshie goes out and gets a hat trick, very emotional because his father passed away, and now everyone's just going on about Tom Wilson. I know we're talking about it 4 days later, but this just happens to be when we talk, and it's okay to talk about it, but it should have been a 5-minute conversation, maybe an hour in the morning, the day after, but this is going to be talked about a long time, because really it's the CBA or it's the players, NHLPA, that agreed on this $5,000 fine maximum. And that's all you can do. That's the only thing you can do right now is just say, hey, that's how the CBA works. It's a slap on the wrist. And then they try to compare with other situations, but Wilson's a repeat offender. Like, I don't know what the thought process, and you got to think too, Josh and Antonia, like if you go back and watch YouTube video after YouTube video, George Parros, he wasn't a goon. He played the game right, but he was one of those guys that fought his way through the National Hockey League. Maybe he's not the right guy for player safety. Maybe that's an option. That's an option they have to look at too. But really what it comes down to, my final point, is the CBA agreed on that $5,000 agreement. There's nothing you can do. And that's my last thought on that question, Josh.
Yeah, the CBA, there's a whole bunch of elements in this. And I think the two main ones that we need to take away from it is I'm in full agreement. I think the way the Rangers went about it was maybe a little bit aggressive, and that reflected in the $250,000 fine they received. But George Parros probably isn't the guy for the job. I'm sure he's a nice guy, class act off the ice with his charities and all that. But when it comes to handing out suspensions and being able to, we saw a similar play, not a similar play, but on the same night, Shane Gostisbehere got a 2-game suspension for a cross check after an empty netter. And yeah, that was probably a suspension. And yeah, I agree with that. But it really depends. I guess it's situation wise. I don't want to get too in deep into it, because then you can start getting into a bunch of like conspiracy theories where people are saying, well, Wilson golfs with him in the off season. I don't want to get into all that. It's probably not true. But I think the NHL needs to take a long, hard look in the mirror. And, maybe my suggestion was that I put in my article and in the video we put out was they need a third party to do this. Someone who's not associated with the game, someone who can look at the rule book and say, okay, this is what he did. This is what they're getting. And then you'll see these dangerous plays eliminated, because, and don't get me wrong, I love a good fight. I love big hits. I love those, messes in front of the net, big hits behind the net, whatever you want to call it. But when a player is, in danger of getting hurt because of reckless and dangerous play, that's what needs to be eliminated, because eventually it's going to lead to, and knock on wood for this, it's going to lead to Austin Matthews getting sucker punched in the face and he misses 10 games in the playoffs. Or, Connor McDavid going hard into the boards off a dirty hit because someone just wanted to take him out, and that guy only gets 2 games, but McDavid is now out for 20. or something like that, right? So I think we could put a nice little bow in this and move on to something more positive. Last night, the Leafs played the Habs 5-2 victory, and Austin Matthews scored his 40th of the season, and that's impressive in itself. But what's more impressive is he's done it with pretty much a bum wrist. He's been quoted as being unable to hold a stick for a majority of the season, and he scored 40 in 49 games, which is, I've never seen something in my lifetime that impressive. Goal scoring wise, what McDavid's doing right now is just equally, if not more impressive. But Matthews scoring 40. Antonio, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that whole push Matthews has been doing this season, just his dominance on the ice.
Yeah, I think, like you said, Matthews is, he's having an unbelievable season. Same with McDavid. Like you said, it's just, I feel like it's, a lot of people are saying like they feel so lucky to be able to watch people like this. And it's true, because it's not so often that you get to see players like this that are able to literally go on the ice every night. And it's like guaranteed that, okay, Austin Matthews is going to get a goal this game, because he gets a goal almost every game. And same for McDavid, he goes on the ice, you know that he's at least going to walk away minimum with 1 point. So it's very, very lucky for all of us to be able to watch this. But I think in particular with Matthews, I think actually one thing that I liked, I think it was of his 40 goals, 25 were assisted by Marner, I think it was. And I think that was really cool too, because Marner's also having an unbelievable season. And just to see, like, that just shows the chemistry that the two of them have. And not to underscore Matthews' success, obviously on his own, he's awesome too. But I just think, you know, it's a team sport, and obviously like Matthews wouldn't be able to do it all on his own. But aside from that, he's having a great season. And I don't know. It scares me too, though, because when we're going to be playing a team like Winnipeg, for example, like in the last game, a lot of people are saying, just sit Matthews, just sit him, because, you know, we don't want him to get injured right before the playoffs and things like that. So like, he's also become a very big target for the tough guys on other teams, but I just, it's unbelievable for him. And I think also if he didn't get hurt for those few games that he was out with his wrist, like you said, I think he would have come close to, if not would have met 50 goals.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. That's the crazy thing. Just being, he's even missed games, playing games, injured. There was a couple games where the only way he was scoring was tipping pucks in front of the net, just a simple, you know, a simple tap in, and just the way he's been doing this. And James, you there?
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, we're just talking about Matthews hitting 40 last night, the dominance he's had this season. Just your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, with Austin Matthews, what can you say? You know, the crazy thing was, I was hearing today that, you know, there was points this season he couldn't even hold a stick. You know, yeah, where he was trying out different knobs and things like that to allow him to, I guess, just grab the stick in any sort of way. So, yeah, you guys, I heard you guys at the tail end there talking about the fact that if he was healthy, I think 55 plus would have been his plateau this year, the way he was scoring at will for that little bit. And he went hand in case with the power play too, right? The power play started to suffer once he got his wrist injury. It wasn't the same, hasn't been the same. So, yeah, everything seems to run through him.
Just a dominant season overall by him. Jamie, any words on the Matthews 40th marker last night?
I haven't. Yeah, it's great. He's scoring 40 goals, but I'm kind of worried, because is he overshadowed right now with McDavid 95, 96 points? Like, which mark is more exciting? Matthew's trying to get to 50 or winning the Rocket Richard trophy, which is handed out to the person with the most goals in the National Hockey League? Or is people more looking at McDavid right now reaching 100 in 55?
I think it's subjective, because
I guess,
you know,
yeah,
Oilers, okay, fan perfect. Base, they're going to be pumped about McDavid. And to be honest, I'm watching Oilers games right now because I just want to see how many points this guy's going to put up. I'm watching their game last night, and they're down 4-0 quickly. But I'm like, I'm not turning this off, because McDavid, and he did it, you know, casual 3 points again. He's been doing that night in, night out. And now he's going to pass that 100-point marker, and I'm going to hit that parlay bet that I had at the beginning of the season because of it. So it's just going to be – something that I think every hockey fan wants to see. The Oilers are already in the playoffs, so it doesn't really have an effect on any other team because it's a personal goal for him, right? Same as Matthews hitting 40. It was a foregone conclusion when he hit 35 that it was going to happen. I think it's good for the game of hockey too, because you're seeing these guys play their best, and they've been playing each other 9 games this season too. And we got to see that best on best hockey that we've been wanting to see and dying for in this Canadian division between Matthews and McDavid. And it's just been a treat to watch, and the way that we see these two just go head to head, and they're highlighting what they're best known for, right? Like McDavid's known for just his overall play. So the fact that he's leading the league in points is perfect. And the fact that Austin is known for his goal scoring and he's leading the league in goals, it matches up. It would be strange if, you know, it was the roles were reversed. I wouldn't be shocked. It would just, maybe that would have a little bit more of a narrative, but this one, it just kind of fits their narratives perfectly. I don't know if I nailed that on the head or not, or if anybody has any thoughts.
No, you nailed that perfectly. What I would say is this is the new age Crosby Ovechkin.
Exactly.
That's exactly what this is, where, you know, McDavid's going to go off and, you know, go off on points. And Matthew's going to go off on goals. That's the way I look at it. You know, I don't know, man. This season, if it was a full 82-game season, just imagine. I look at Austin Matthews and say, could you have gotten 65-plus? Could you have got 70 if you were on an absolute heater the way he is? Now you want to see an 82-game season out of him because you want to see what he can get. Same thing with McDavid. You know, McDavid, 100 points in 56 games is probably going to happen. But then you see, okay, what would it be over 82? But then everybody says, well, the value of competition would be higher here, there, and everywhere. I don't buy that argument. A great player is going to find a way to get his points and his cookies. And McDavid's done it every year. And Austin Matthews has scored the goals every year. So that argument seems moot to me, but yeah.
Yeah. I've heard that, you know, level of competition argument too. And I took a look at, it was a quick search because we did it mid show yesterday. We just took a look at one of the questions one of my co-hosts asked me was, would McDavid hit 100 points if he wasn't in the Canadian division? And I said, hell yeah, he would. And I took a look at just the goals against that each team is allowed. You have to go up 15 spots until you find the second Canadian team, which was Vancouver, for goals against. So yeah, I don't buy that either. Same with Austin. He would still be on the same goal pace. Let's move on to the goaltending, because Frederik Andersen played his first, I guess, lick of professional hockey in just over 6 weeks yesterday. He played 31 minutes with the Marlies, and he made 14 saves on 16 shots. Early on, he didn't look too hot, but then he seemed to settle down a little bit. And it was announced about an hour ago he will play a full game with the Marlies tomorrow when they play the Manitoba Moose. So what can we expect out of this little conditioning stint? Because the way I look at it is, he's going to finish up his stint with the Marlies. I don't know if he'll use those full 3 games. But then the Leafs only have 2 games left after that, one against Winnipeg and one against Ottawa, I believe. Maybe not in that order. But I'm running out for this guy to get into an NHL game, and I don't feel comfortable having him play his first lick of NHL play in over, it would be 8 weeks at that point, in game one of the playoffs when it really, really matters. So I'd love to hear, you know, whoever wants to jump in here, what the Leafs are trying to do with Freddie here and what they're looking to get out of it.
Well, it's pretty easy. I mean, they made the roster moves today, and I'll let everybody else jump in a second here. But you mean they made the roster moves today with Sandin, and they said it's completely cap reflective. So that means to me, they want to get him in full game tomorrow, see where he's at, where he's progressing. And then I think you put him in against Ottawa. That's the game you put him in, obviously a lower ranked team, not as many weapons, all that kind of stuff, whatever. You know, they have nothing to play for. It's not, shouldn't be that hard of a game. Not that they won't compete Ottawa, but you know what I'm talking about. It's not that level of competition. Then I think you see a split game between him and Campbell on the Winnipeg Jets game. Have them both ready, both tested, both playing that game against Winnipeg. Because Toronto really, honestly, has nothing to play for at this point. First place, I know it's not locked up, signed, sealed, and delivered, but it pretty much is. So I could see a split game in the NHL between Campbell and Freddie, or you give Freddie both of those starts. But I think the plan is to get him in the lineup. Also, another thing too, Riley Nash is sporting a red jersey at practice. So, you know, you might get to see him in a game as well. And maybe a couple moves retroactive to the LTIR with Foligno and Hyman, you know, because both of those guys know the role, know where they fit, and you know you can put them in the lineup and they're fine. you know, they don't need much seasoning to get back. But with Freddie, you definitely want him, like you said, Josh, between the pipes before the dance starts for the playoffs. But they definitely want to give him that ball and every opportunity to run with it. But I'm interested to hear what everybody else got to say.
Yeah, and Tony, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, so I think everyone knew that they wanted to have Freddie and Campbell as the goalie duo going into the playoffs, and that Rittich was just like the extra guy. But I think a lot of people were like blowing up after Freddie led in the first two goals. And I mean, obviously we don't want to see that happen, but I feel like everyone has to remember he's coming off of a knee injury, and that's not easy for goalies to come off of. And you know, after those two goals, he did settle down. I believe he ended up stopping 12 of 14 shots he faced.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a good, like he played well. I don't think for his first game back, anyone should have really expected like him to be a complete shutdown goalie, because I don't really think that was realistic. I mean, he is an NHL goalie, but circumstances in play, like it's a little bit different. And I don't know, I just think that a lot of people overreacted, but I definitely think it's really good for him to be able to get this practice or these practice games, because just working in practice with the Leafs and having them shoot on him, like that's nowhere near what an actual game is like. So for him, even if it's with the Marlies, to be able to get in these couple games, I definitely think it's good. And then I would like to see him, of course, before the playoffs start. I hope that they'd be able to get him in, like you were saying, for the Ottawa and Winnipeg game. That way, at least, like, they can still choose to go with Campbell, because he's in, like, he's on a roll right now. He's in his groove, so he might be the safer bet. But I definitely think Freddie has to be given a chance to step into an NHL game to get that feel. That way, if Campbell does falter, like, if that does happen in the playoffs, you know that Freddie isn't going to be stepping into an NHL game without having NHL practice before the playoffs.
Yeah, like I'm working on an article right now about the whole Leafs goaltending situation. And one of the things I'm kind of stumbling on is that Campbell has the skill to do it, but not the experience. And this is just based off this season. But then you look at Freddie and he's got the experience, but he doesn't quite seem to have the skill at the moment. So I think that's something they're kind of battling. I don't know if, Jamie, you have something to say about that.
My thoughts on the Anderson situation, I see him play May 12th versus the Senators. Then we've got the Jets. So we've got Montreal tomorrow night. So we'll see Campbell or maybe Rittich play. But it makes sense to me to see Anderson maybe play on the May 12th versus the Senators. Gives them that one game. I know it's a lesser team, but it still gives them NHL action. And then we see Campbell. I don't mean to keep repeating myself, but you look at the situation St. Louis had. Binnington came in. It doesn't matter about dollars and cents, right? $700,000 goalie compared to whatever Anderson's making or whatever Campbell's making, to an $8 million goalie, $9 million. It doesn't really matter. Like, I know Leaf Nation is impatient. We're all impatient. We haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967. So you've got to understand, like, I'm putting all my apples to give you to give you my best answer. I'm putting all my apples in Campbell's basket right now. I'm on the Campbell train, right? I've hopped off the Simmons train and I'm on the Campbell train, right? You just got to go with the, like, it doesn't even matter. I've played nets. I talk to goaltenders that deal with NHL guys every day. That doesn't matter. My own opinion, my gut opinion is what matters the most for me, at least. I'm going with Jack Campbell. But that's, if you were to ask me, what game do you see Josh Anderson play? The most common sense,
you mean Freddie answer, Anderson?
Freddie Anderson. Yeah. I get Josh and I get that other Anderson, the Marlies all mixed up and whatever, but I'm going with Freddie Anderson. Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks, James. I'm going with Freddie Anderson versus the Senators. I know it's the Senators, but it's an NHL game, man. People thought the Ottawa Senators weren't even going to win 10 games. They're up to 21 games. They're a National Hockey League team. Who cares if they're a lesser team than Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg? Give them the game versus the Senators. Give Campbell the game against the Jets, and then you know, call a spade, and then see what Keith makes, what decision Keith makes after the next three games. I don't really know what to tell you, but
listen, if Freddie comes in and is able to win the game against Ottawa, win the game against Winnipeg, if he plays both, whatever, and he shows some level of the Freddie Anderson we've come to expect after 4 years with an organization dragging him to the playoffs and being there, bailing them out so many nights, being the only guy to hold them in games at times. And then in the past year and a bit, you know, where we've had this wonky pandemic stuff and, you know, maybe the knee injury factored in for Freddie. I feel the fan base is not only just turned on him, but just likes the shiny new toy. I'm a huge guy for loyalty. You know, Freddie Anderson has gone out there, done his job, played this year when he was hurt because we had no other option, probably further injured himself, hence the reason why he was on the shelf so long to begin with. I think he's earned the right if he plays well. That's the caveat I'll throw in there. But other than that, I think he's earned the right to have game one of the playoffs. And I've said this to you, Josh. I've said this to you, Jamie, and Antonio, I'll say this to you. If he falters in game number one, you have six more games of runway to play with. Then you turn to Jack Campbell, who's been your hot hand. But I think you owe it to Freddie Anderson, the goaltender that has been there, your constant for so long. And may I add, you haven't given him support the past few years. Campbell's been that support. McElhaney was a flash in the pan of support, but who's his backup been? He's battled with Sparks and Hutchinson. They've gone through a mill of guys before they got to Campbell. So I think he earned the right to where he gets to start that first game. And I feel the loyalty from the organization to player should be there. And if you listen to anybody who talks about the Leafs locker room, whether it's Alter, Koshan, Myrtle, you name it, they all talk about how everybody in that locker room is pulling and wanting to see Freddie Anderson on the ice. So you not only have to give him it from loyalty standpoint, but you also want to make sure you keep the morale of the team high. If you give the guy the opportunity and he falters, then you can say, guys, we gave him the ball. He couldn't carry it. He's still going to be a part of this team, but we're going with Campbell. Then you've crossed all your T's, dotted all your I's. But loyalty is key, and the Leafs are trying to build this culture where they're with their players, they support their players, and it's all different than it used to be back in the day. So this is another step for that. You show loyalty. Even though the guy's not signed for next year, you still show that loyalty, and players in spades love that 100%.
For sure. And that's, I mean, we can talk about the whole goaltending situation all day. The only way we're going to get an answer is when we see the lineup tweeted out for game one about at, I think it puck drop 7:30. I'm sure we'll find out. Speaking of tweets being put out an hour ago, Kristen Shilton from TSN has tweeted out that Adam Brooks will go in for Stefan Nosen and Ben Hutton will go in for Sandin, and that the situation is related more to salary cap than anything else. So it looks like the Leafs are up to a little bit of working Brandon Pridham overtime with this whole salary cap situation. So what do we think's going on here? Because they got three games left. I'm pretty sure Keith and Dubas have a general idea of what they want their playoff lineup to look like. Are they getting a look at these guys, or do you think it actually is related to the salary cap?
Oh, definitely. And then, Tony, I'll let you answer right after this. Sorry. I'm just very, very hot off that Freddie talk. But it definitely is salary related, for one. And for two, we watched them do this towards the trade deadline, guys. They pushed everybody they could into the lineup to get them closest they could to that LTIR relief. And this may just be more of that, getting the contracts either down or closer to the limit, whatever way Pridham's seeing that he needs to make it work, to either pull a guy off and put a guy on, so like a Hyman or a Foligno, just to free up more of that space, or it's to be able to pull someone off and have the maximum amount of cap space where it's dollars and cents. I mean, we've seen how close they came trade deadline day to being, you know, XYZ close to the cap. I think it was not even 40 grand they had in space. It ended up being before they did the LTIR stuff. So Pridham's a cap magician. That's why he's there. He wrote the rules. He knows all the loopholes and all the basically ins and outs. So they're going to try to maximize their roster and get who they can, you know, into a couple games before the end of the season. And I think they really want to see what Riley Nash can do if he's ready. And they really want to see what Freddie can do in an NHL game. And you have to pull both those players off of LTIR. And the only way to do that is to make the dollars and cents work. And that's why I think this is all cap shenanigans again.
Antonio, I'll turn that over to you.
I don't know how, like, how in depth, like, I don't know the cap, all the cap stuff, like, in depth, but I'm assuming
I don't
that,
think anybody does.
Yeah, no. It's very difficult, but I'm assuming it has to do with that. But I also think that a little bit of it has to do with trying to see who they want to keep in. I know there's going to be at least like one guy out of Brooks, Mikhaev, like all of them that are going to get a permanent spot. So I think it's like a bit of both, possibly more towards the cap side. But I also think that Keefe also kind of has an idea already of what he's going to go with. I think it's just maybe the positioning of the lineup, like in terms of, I know before Foligno got hurt, Keith had said that he wanted to try Foligno elsewhere to see, because he had only played with Matthews and Marner, so he wanted to see if he worked anywhere else. So I think he knows who is going to be in the lineup. I feel like it's more just positioning and where everyone's going to be. So I think it is leaning more towards cap that these moves are being made.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the whole cap situation is definitely confusing if you don't, you know, pretty much read the CBA in and out. Jamie, what do you think about this?
It's a different year for everybody, even Leaf fans that I talk to, because it's almost like we never experienced this much depth since being a fan. Like, we've got so much depth. We've got Danosin came over from San Jose in that three-way deal, however he came over. And people mentioned last night, why is Brooks being dropped for Nosen? We've got so much depth, and I don't know the whole cap situation. I don't know when the word comes across my desk when the word retaining comes up on my desk, I don't even know what that means either. So it's all these big words like retaining and cap this, and Tampa Bay started the whole cap thing, and it's just all mushy in my head. But you've got to understand, we've got so much depth right now that it's good to have, because it's better to do this now instead of into the playoffs. Then we've, you know, hate to say this, but now, or sorry, when it goes into playoffs, we don't want to have to rely on Martin Marincin like we did last year. We've got so much guys now in place, right? You got Riley Nash, we got Hutton, we've got Brooks, we've got Sandin. I do want to mention my Sandin note here, but it just, you got to just understand, we've got so much depth right now. Like, if a guy gets dropped because they want to put Nosen in, Keith wants to know how he played. I know he only played 10 minutes last night, but now he played an NHL game. He can see what he can do. And, you know, people complaining today, why is Hutton take over Sandin's spot? Well, we've got to understand, we've got to see how he plays in the playoffs. We've got to, like, it comes down to it. It's just people are impulsive, just not realizing the whole big picture. And we're not used to this, right? We're not used to the depth. Like, last year, we had to rely on Martin Marincin to save the day because Muzzin went down, right? It's just, like, I could go on for days, but you got to be patient, right? And when you get to talk about Leafs every week, you really got to settle yourself down and just talk about the practicals. Talk about what actually matters. These people that are on Twitter going on about, why are you playing this guy? Why is this guy? Like, it's just, they don't read deep into it. They're just not really into it. They're fans, but they really don't understand the actual.
I'll counteract you there, Jamie, because I think it is important that we ask these questions, because we want to understand these lineup changes and why they're coming in. Because 100%. If you know, you're playing Sandin and, like, he's looked solid, I'll agree with that. And then you see Ben Hutton drawing in, I want to know why. I want to know the thought process behind that. I'm not saying, you know, I'm going to question the call up of, let's just say, Martin Marincin or whatever, because that would be to an injury. But I want to understand the thought process between having Hutton in there. Is it an experience thing because they want to carry an experienced team into this playoffs, which has been proven to pay off? Or is it actually a salary cap issue? Like, that's just my thought process on that whole thing. I don't mind the lineup changes, because at the end of the day, we're talking about a depth forward or a depth defenseman. When I see the lineup, I see my top six is still intact. I'm like, okay, yeah, sweet. Matthews is still playing. He's going to carry this team to a victory, right? It's the depth lineups that they kind of keep me interested in what's going on. if that makes sense.
100%, Josh. But I know I see some of it being a question, why are you dropping this guy? But it's more, oh, Brooks is playing so well. Why are you dropping Brooks to go for Nosen? That's the other factor, too. A lot of people are pissed because Brooks got dropped out of the lineup. Why is Robertson going down to the minors? Now, that's a legit question because they don't want to burn. They don't want to play him 11 games because then that burns his entry level or however that works. That's a legitimate question. Why is Robertson down with the Marlies? Right? He's down there looking like Austin Matthews. Why isn't he with the big club? Well, this is a question gets asked all the time. It's because they don't want to burn. You only play 9 games. And after your 10th game, you're now with the big club and it burns the whole year. So they didn't want to burn a year. That's why Robertson is down with the Marlies. That's a legit question. But don't start blasting the Leafs or Keith saying, why is Brooks out of the lineup? Because we've got to see how Nosen plays out. And that's not what a lot of people see. You're 100% correct, though, on we do have to try to educate those fans because they want to know why Brooks is not in the lineup. But there's also other people lashing out at Keith saying, well, that was a stupid move. It wasn't a stupid move. We've got so much depth right now. They're probably just not used to all of it, really what it comes down to. And the salary.
Yeah, well, I mean, it circles back to what we just talked about this being, you know, strictly cap related. I mean, it's not calculated about who's going to be better. I mean, it always is good to see what your depth can do. But in this situation, I think like Antonio said, you just want to, you want to be able to get guys into the lineup. And, you know, the best way you do that for the guys who are on LTIR is you have to do some cap shenanigans. And that's what this is. Rasmus Sandin's proved his worth. Brooks, he's proved his worth. Cool. But right now you got to figure out how to get these guys in our LTIR into a couple of games and, you know, fine tune them a little bit so they're ready to go. And I don't know. I'm a big guy, and Josh, you're probably like this. Antonio, you're probably like this too. I want to see behind the curtain. 100%.
That's why sorry to just go off track here. That's why I'm excited for like this Amazon series they're doing, because I don't know how much they're going to show us. It's probably not a lot, but you know, it's just seeing behind the scenes, like a little peek at what we
I can't wait.
Like, do you remember that the Winter Classic series? We got what they called a peek behind the curtain, but it wasn't really, because when it got down to that Dion Phaneuf contract extension, they closed the doors and we didn't get to see that. But it was just like a little peek behind the curtain. And that's what hockey's missing, I think.
Yep.
Like, people want to ask questions and everyone's I guess we could call it the old boys club are saying, no, you're not getting the answers. So, you know, I think it's just natural to ask questions. And it has been a little bit better this year with the, ever since Lou left, really, just the team seems more see-through and they're not hiding anything.
And more open.
More open, yeah. Transparent, that's the word I was looking for. But, yeah, I mean, we could talk about this all day. I know we're running close on time. So why don't we finish with I'd like to get everyone's opinion on this. I'll lay out the situation for you. The Vancouver Canucks obviously have more games to play than everybody else. On May 16th, they start a 3-game stretch against Calgary. Both those teams will hopefully by then have been eliminated from the playoffs. So my thought process here is the NHL, they can move forward with the playoffs starting, let's say, on the 18th or whatever that Wednesday is, and still have these teams, if they want them to or need them to because of TV money or the ranking in the draft lottery, finish out those games. They don't want those games going head-to-head with playoff games because we all know the Canadian markets or the Vancouver market, the Calgary market, they will probably tune into a Canadian game over like a Minnesota Wild game. So what my thought process here is they're going to play those games, but we might see those games starting at noon or 1 p.m. just so they can start the playoffs when they wanted to, maybe a week later than they wanted to, and not have these teams sitting around for 2 weeks waiting for two, at the time, irrelevant teams battle it out. Does this seem like a fair solution, or am I kind of out of whack here thinking that the NHL would do a solution that was that smart?
I don't think they have much foresight into it, to be honest, Josh. I'll let Antonia answer that one before I say something not too foolish.
I'm not too sure either. I feel like in regards to the teams, like the players and stuff that are in the playoffs, I almost wonder if I have no idea if the team, if they would ask the teams, like if the teams would have a say, like I doubt it, but like, I don't know if they would take into consideration the fact that these teams are going to be off for however long it is, a week, 2 weeks, whatever it is. I don't know if that would be taken into consideration, and they would say, like, they don't want them to be not playing for X amount of time, so let's try and start earlier than it would have been if we waited for Vancouver to finish. I don't know. I feel like it would only be a few days difference anyway, because Vancouver finishes on the 19th, I think.
Yeah, 19th.
Yeah, so it would only be like a few days difference. I don't know, again, money-wise and like all that stuff, if it makes a difference for the NHL, but yeah, I don't know. I can see them waiting, but at the same time, I can see them just saying, like, let's just start.
Yeah, I think, you know, in school, in the program I'm in, sport management at Humber, give them a shout out because it's a solid program. We did take a look at, like, media rights and deals, and they would be losing quite a bit of money if they were to just cancel the games. I don't think that's something they will want to do, considering they have to cancel games last year as well. So just in my opinion, kind of having a touch on a little bit of insight just to how these things work. These games will probably end up being played, but I'm thinking they might be noon games, you know, 1 p.m. games, 2 p.m. games, kind of like a little appetizer into the playoff games, if you will, which I think that would actually be pretty cool. You know, if the playoffs start on a Wednesday, you can start getting ready. You know, maybe you get a 3 p.m. game between Canucks and the Flames. That might be a little fun, a little different approach to it. But you never know, right? Like, the NHL likes to do things the difficult way. Jamie, I don't know what you think about the way they're going to finish out this schedule in an almost impossible situation.
It is what it is. It's just that type of year. 9 games in 14 days for the Vancouver Canucks. Like, I know the Leafs aren't in that position. They get 3 games now in the next week or so, but I feel bad for Travis Green. I feel bad for those guys. Like, you know, it's not their fault, right? It's 9 games in 14 days. They've got to play it out. And you're right. The TV deals are what's paying some of the bills. And, you know, you got to respect that, right? The TV guys are dishing out money. People in Vancouver want to see Canucks hockey. You know, we've got Quinn Donovan front. We know quite well, friend of the show. He wants to see Canucks hockey. He doesn't want to see a team just fold their tent and take off just because they've got 9 games left, 6 more than the Leafs. Like, it's give the fans what they deserve in Vancouver, Calgary, whoever's got the majority of the games left. You know, I'm not pumping anybody's tires here. I'm just saying, like, that's what really it comes down to, the TV deals, and give the Vancouver fans what they deserve at the end of the day. But I'm not really sure how to really answer that, but do I have a quick second just to vent my Sandin note, or do we want to move on?
I'll give you 45 seconds because my dog is crying.
Well, I got 6 points. What point am I going to say next? Okay. I'll talk about I've got a Foligno rant too, but that can wait. The Sandin rant. Okay. If you guys obviously watched the game last night.
Yep.
Who was the 2 defensemen on the ice for the Toronto Maple Leafs when Montreal scored both goals? Dermott and Sandin. The amount of crap that Sandin, I don't know what Twitter you guys are paying attention to. I don't know if my Twitter is different than yours. But everyone's crapping on Sandin because, to be honest, now he's a 21-year-old defenseman. Who knows when Bogosian's going to come back into the lineup? We may not see definitely want to see Bogo over Sandin. 100%. That's not even an argument. But I know you're 21 years old, but you've got to dump that puck off the boards. That goal only happened because he didn't shoot it off the boards, and they're shitting on him this morning. And I understand, like, I don't trust in Dermott, right? I think maybe if Hutton can kind of get his game going, we may see Hutton over Dermott. You got the Sandin, Brody. Sandin on the back end last night on the power play. The guy's a stud. No, in no way down the road Sandin makes Riley expendable. If they trade Riley or let him go because Sandin's up and coming, he's still got 2 or 3 years, maybe 2 years left, maybe next year and a half. So for people to sit there on Twitter this morning and say, oh, yeah, he cost us the game, we've been seeing this all for 20 years. In that Boston series, we lost a 4-0 lead. It became 4-2 because Dermott and Sandin, I know they had a little blunder. It wasn't Campbell's fault. But just for people that are bashing Sandin this morning, it's going to happen. Now, hopefully, stuff like that doesn't happen in the playoffs because we understand 4-0 leads evaporate very quickly. I saw it this year. I'm not going to get into how I saw it, but it happens. You can lose a 4-0 lead pretty quickly. Now,
yeah, I think like it's so, you know, with a young guy like Sandin, it's, yeah, he shouldn't have done that. But I think if we're nitpicking at that on a 5-2 win where the Leafs look pretty dominant, then we're getting kind of deep into things just to look for. So
in Sandin's defense, in Sandin's defense, you hope in the playoffs you score more goals than the goals you allow in. And to be honest, my last point, Caden Primo, that wasn't his game to play. He was not ready for the Toronto Maple Leafs back-to-back. Caden Primo should have played the Senators game. If we had seen Jake Allen play the whole game last night, and he had to come in at a 4-0 lead in an unplanned game, that was not Jake Allen's time to come in. It was either Ducharme's fault or the whole team's fault. It wasn't Caden Primo's fault. So there's another point. Okay, so you've just got to stop jumping on backs of players, because we're going to end up, it's like Jake Gardner, right? Guys, we're just going to end up throwing guys out of town. Dion Phaneuf, right? You know, Jake Allen played last night, we would have seen a different game. We wouldn't have seen the 4-0 first period shellacking. So Twitter's got to really settle down and just understand, like, Sandin is 21 years old. Give the guy a break. Right. But you've got to also realize we've got so much depth right now. It's a blessing. Right. So if Hutton plays tonight over Sandin, there's a method behind the madness. And yep. We'll get to the Foligno topic some other day, because why did you give up a first round pick for Nick Foligno? Well, geez, like, I can open up that can of worms, but we don't have 15 minutes. We'll save that. But you've got to realize, if you watch the movie Draft Day and you watch the movies that if you watch movies, football or hockey, and they talk about drafts, you've got to give up stuff to get somebody. Columbus knew what they had, and Toronto wanted it, so they wanted a first round pick. So if you got to understand that too, why are you putting Foligno on the third line when we gave up a first round pick, right? Why is Galchenyuk playing like second line, or Galchenyuk should play third line? Hyman should be playing the first line. We gave up a first-round pick for Nick Foligno. Nick Foligno doesn't just go right to the first line. You've got to see what works. And I don't give a shit if Matthews starts playing fourth-line minutes or he's on the fourth line contributing. You got to find the best way to win the Stanley Cup, and that's the ultimate prize. So stop bitching and complaining on who's going to play where, what about Sandin, why is Hutton coming into the lineup, and that's it is what it is. So I just wanted to get that off my chest, because yeah, I'm just really tired of people wearing the Leafs jersey and just kind of just saying, okay, Sandin's garbage because he couldn't get it off the boards. Like, come on. Like, there's, like you said, Josh, growing pains. We've got to be really patient here, and I apologize for taking more time, but I really wanted to get that off my chest.
Sounds good. And with that, James, it's your show. I'll turn it over to you to sign us off.
Hey, this is Offside Hockey Talk, where hockey comes to talk. Make sure to check out everybody on each individual platform. Josh with the Orion Sportscast, and Antonia, let everybody know where they can find you.
With my podcast, That Hockey Chick, on Instagram and Twitter.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy the weekend. Celebrate your mother. Treat her right. Give her a phone call. Drop her some flowers. Do the right thing. Cheers, folks.